Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, sponsored by cradiodifferently.com. I'm Tim Burrows. This week, Mumbrella's Agencies of the Year. KFC goes on the attack.
Apparently, some McRestaurants are using processed chicken patties to make their scorching burgers.
The last set of radio ratings for 2011. And ACP boss Phil Scott departs. With us today at Mumbrella House is Chris Stevenson, PhD Strategy Director.
Good to be here, Tim.
Martin Lane, Publishing Director of Mumbrella and Encore magazine.
Hi, Tim.
And podcast producer Colin Delaney.
Hello.
Welcome back to the podcast, Chris. Now, there is something we need to talk about. The Mumbrella Annual is out this week, along with our various Agency of the Year announcements, which we will get onto. We announced you as one of our top seven strategists of the year.
So, Thank you very much.
Well, and enough about you. Let's talk about them.
Let's talk a bit more about me.
which strategists do you kind of respect around the trap? So there's some that you cross paths with?
Not as often as I should, really. I think that getting a chance to do the 360 earlier in the year was a great chance to get and kind of co-conspire with some of those people. I think there's actually a bit of an opportunity, actually, for us strategists to get together a bit more often.
Because I guess you get things like the account planning group on the creative side, but there isn't really a media equivalent.
There isn't, so we might have to address that. That might be one of the tasks we set ourselves for 2012.
And you managed to avoid naming any strategists that you respect.
Well, I kind of think, I mean, it's not deliberate at all. I think there's genuinely a bigger question around, I think, how as a strategic community we can actually plug into each other and try and collaborate a bit more. I think there's a huge opportunity.
Which brings me back to my question. Are there any strategists?
There's some brilliant thing coming out of Naked, like a lot of what the Naked guys are doing. I think you mentioned Al in the top seven, Al over at Clem's.
Al Crawford,
done some great work with him. Tom over at The Works, Tom Donald, I think is a cracking thinker and is doing some really good work over there. So I think there's great thinking happening.
Tom was the one who recently posted on Mumbrella the opinion piece on Your Audience is Stoned, which generated much comment.
I can imagine, and a phenomenally interesting and philosophical piece it was.
Do you think, just briefly, that maybe you guys, the fact that you said that there isn't enough sort of intermingling or whatever, you made the manifesto for the 360. Is that something that should be in the manifesto, or?
I think that when we did the manifesto this year, it was about what are those things we want to address as an industry? What are those things we want to look at and move on and think about? And it might be that collaboration amongst those specialists and disciplines to continue to move the industry agenda on in 2012 might be something we look at. I think that as we look back at 2011, I genuinely think we'll look back at it as a really positive year for the industry and one that a lot of things started happening and we kind of got a lot of stuff together, and I think that there's a real opportunity to keep that momentum going in 2012.
Hmm. Now, you've just come straight from a pitch. What was it?
coming straight from a pitch is my I'm having a lie-in cover story.
But that the I'm having a lie-in sounds more like a cover story for it's a pitch I'm not allowed to talk about.
We never talk about pitches until the result's known, but it was an interesting couple of hours for the great conversation, so we'll see what happens.
Are we still talking about your lie?
Yeah, that's the lie. Yeah.
Now, 2012, next year, what does it hold in store for PhD?
We just want to keep on doing the stuff that we're doing. So 2011 has been a great year for us. We've seen significant growth. We've seen growth in terms of the people we've got and the business. We've seen growth in terms of the clients that we've got working with us and that want to hear what we've got to say and what we've got to produce for them. And we've seen growth in terms of the revenues. So we want to keep that going. There'll be more thought leadership. So this year we published 2016. It's 3 years out of three that we've published as an agency. We have full intention of making that 4 out of 4.
And do you know yet what the topic might be?
There's some early ideas, and so we're discussing as a network.
What are the themes you're thinking about?
From a personal point of view, I think that the nature of debate and the nature of consumer, for want of a better word, involvement in brands and campaigns is now at such an interesting level that I think it actually warrants a little bit of analysis. I think that if you look at our previous publications from Fluid and in 2016, they kind of built the foundations for new infrastructures and new landscapes for media. I think the opportunity really is to think about how is that really coming into play. We've seen example after example this year of what's been called a controversial campaign after controversial campaign after controversial campaign. All that's happening is we're now just picking up on those conversations that have always happened, and those conversations are now coming to the fore. So I think that what's really interesting for me is how people are starting to use this new media infrastructure.
So this isn't so much talking to consumers one-on-one, but when the consumers come together and form.
It's always a conversation. It's always a conversation. The idea that we can disseminate and broadcast a one-to-many message, I think we've now pretty much seen case after case is increasingly, let's say, insufficient at best as a model.
It was interesting to see that this week Time magazine announced its Person of the Year, and again, rather than actually having a person, it was the protester. This idea that we've seen the uprising of the Arab Spring, we've seen the Occupy movement. I suppose arguably, though, we can even look at closer to home things like the Kyle Sanderlands saga.
Yeah, I think.
Do you buy the protester?
I totally buy it. I think there's another great recent example with the Get Up initiative for its time and the video they created locally, which got picked up around the world.
This was for the recognition of the same rights for gay partnerships to be recognised as marriage.
Yeah, and that whole upending of the model, which goes broadcast starts a conversation, which then echoes and happens in networks. On its head, the conversations are starting in networks, conversations are starting in communities, and institutions and organizations, if they're smart, will be listening and amplifying what those communities and networks are saying and what the agendas of those communities are. So when I think about thought leadership in 2012, I've mentioned this idea of how people are using media. I think alongside that, gamification is really significant. I think alongside that...
let's unwrap gamification first of all.
So gamification is the idea that you use gaming principles in order to look at how people cooperate. So Wikipedia is the first biggest example, but something like Foot Locker have taken that and created Sneakerpedia. There are examples from the States where oil companies have crowdsourced and gamified looking for oil or looking for natural resources. And The Guardian in the UK used a game layer essentially to get through all the MP's expenses about 18 months ago. So example after example, and we expect to see a lot more in 2012 of gamification.
Do you think you could run a media agency on a gamification process, or could you manage people on that process?
Well, we do. So we've got houses in PhD.
What sort of like Gryffindor?
Exactly. Yes, and we have house cups.
Have you?
Yeah.
So what?
Whole thing's gamified. They're named after great Australian animals. So we have bandicoots, and we have sea dragons, and we have devils, of which I am one, and then we have the fearsome funnel webs who under the guidership of Bondar have had an amazing year. They've stormed it. They've been they're warranted the Slytherin of the agency, which is really really unfair and really unfounded, but golly, they've had a good year.
And do you have like house captains?
Yes.
And who are the house captains?
Well, Richard's mine.
Richard.
Richard Johnson is currently leading the Devils. I think Pete Short heads up the Bandicoots. Bondar, Kate Bondar, has been taking the funnel webs to victory after victory after victory. And then from a Sea Dragon point of view, I think it's Stephen Burt. I think Stephen Burt is still the glorious leader of the Sea Dragons.
And the idea is they're not led necessarily by the most senior management at the agency then?
Absolutely not. So how do you instill leadership principles early on? How do people who want to step up and take part? But also how do we acknowledge every day in every way those achievements that are happening in and around the agency? And how do we acknowledge that work? And how do we instill teamwork and identity and within PhD and at a day-to-day level?
And at the end of the year, Fanover Web, so they've got a big prize of some description.
Well, I don't want to preempt the results of this term's points, but they've had an impressive run for the last few terms, and I think that it would be a foolish man who bet against the Funnel Webs to take the House Cup this year.
What will the winners get, though? It's a House Cup, is it?
They get the cup, and they get each term they get half a day and some budget to go do something as a team.
And what were the competitions? Is it strictly sort of work related, or is it drinking game related? Is it a mix of both?
It's not drinking game related.
Of course not.
It's primarily about the work. It's primarily about, primarily about the work, but also about, it's about agency. So it's about contributing to the agency, contributing to the output, contributing to what we do and how we do it, which could be social. You know, we work really hard to build a culture where people are inquisitive and where people can challenge and where people are exposed to things they might otherwise not be exposed to. So. Helping to make that happen in an agency is as rewarded as great thinking from the work point of view. So we have gamified the agency.
You were listing a few themes which gamification was one, at which point I stopped you. What else were you going to say?
I think if there's another area for 2012 for us, if I was starting to think about what the next book would be, I think this area of utility, I think that it...
Don't quite understand what you mean.
So utility is usefulness. And I think when the history of media and communications is written by the aliens and the robots, I think they will look back at the 20th century as the blip. The 20th century, which was where broadcast had the main grasp of what we did and how we did it. That was the blip. Before the 20th century, markets were conversations. Communications were conversations. In the 21st century, that's increasingly come full circle, and that's increasingly the case now. In that context, and in the context of where conversations come first, and where there is essentially an infinite amount of media and a finite amount of attention, disproportionate cut-through increasingly comes from being relevant through usefulness. So as brands, as people who are communications professionals and media professionals, how can we create usefulness?
Can you think of a sort of real-world example?
Yeah, I referenced Sneakerpedia. I mean, it's a passion point of mine, but I think Foot Locker are a retail brand that said, well, look, let's not just make ads telling people which shoes we've got in store this month. Let's instead, if people are walking into our store, if they're passionate about sneakers, let's create some usefulness for that sneaker passion. So they create Sneakerpedia, where you can go and you can log on your sneaks, and you become part of an encyclopedic base of all the sneakers, and you can tag different trainers, you can search them, you can explore them, and you can really, as a brand, fuel a passion point that's relevant to you and what you do it.
What's your level been? Have you just read stuff? Have you contributed?
I registered for the beta and then struggled to get past the beta. So I registered, and
you weren't chosen.
I'll jump on. I'm not for the beta now. No, but that's okay. That's okay. Next year, it might be the year that I get chosen for Sneakerpedia, and I might get chosen for Hottie of the Year as well. You never know. So I'll be lobbying for both vigorously across the course of 2012.
Hottie of the Year, for those who haven't yet gathered, is one of the categories we looked at in the Mumbrella Annual this year.
After wearing more sandals.
Currently on sale on all good internets, yes. Now, what were the big stories for you this year? What were the big themes, the big controversies of 2011?
I kind of think you can't talk about 2011 without talking about phone hacking and without a real debate about the relationship between media ownership and privacy and personalization. I think the confluence of that and something like the continued growth of Facebook and Zuckerberg's assertion that the privacy is dead, I think creates a really fascinating conflict in 2011. And I think that was genuinely one of the stories of the year for me.
Which is a good point to bring, Martin. As a journalist, how do you think that journalism has come through the phone hacking scandal?
I was quite interested actually to read this week that people from news have sort of gone on the attack towards The Guardian, saying that they'd exaggerated some of the claims about Millie Dowler, who was the murdered teenager, and the allegations that people acting on behalf of news had deleted phone messages that had led the family to believe that she was still alive. And Alan Rushbridger at The Guardian had to backtrack a little bit and say, well, you know, we published the story according to the facts that were known at the time. So I think what we're seeing, to answer your question, is the first signs of news actually being quite aggressive rather than defensive.
Although, I'll tell you the one problem I had reading their stories was, and I don't think it's fully come out yet, but certainly the coverage around the backtracking initially was, well, actually what the police were saying was, yes, news listened to the messages, they possibly deleted some of the messages, but may not have deleted the message that was the actual one that gave the parents hope that she was still alive. Yeah. So to me, it's kind of splitting hairs a little bit, even now.
Absolutely, but I just think it's an interesting point that for the first time they've actually tried to, rather than just say, mea culpa, we were wrong, it was terrible, and you know, had that kind of incredible moment where Rupert Murdoch actually, you know, was really falling on his sword, to now trying to spin it in another way. And as you say, I agree, it's splitting hairs, but I think it's just that first sign that maybe they'll start to fight back a bit now.
I noticed on Thursday the Telegraph here in Sydney reprinted a Kelvin McKenzie column from The Sun, which was attacking The Guardian, which you almost think, you know, I don't remember that high level of coverage at sort of putting out all of the columnists and stuff when it was going in the other direction. It kind of seems a bit much to kind of, you know, joining the attack locally on that sort of level. Much as I adore Kelvin McKenzie, I have to say.
You adore Kelvin McKenzie.
I do. He is one of my journalistic heroes.
Would you say that you'd based yourself on Kelvin McKenzie at all?
There have been times where I've thought to myself, what would Kelvin do? He's famous for talking about the reverse ferret, which is when you've taken one stance journalistically and it's proven to be disastrously wrong. How do you perform a reverse ferret?
He once was guest editor on
Media Week, wasn't yes, when I was the editor of Media Week.
And how did that go?
Yes. Quite daunting.
For him, I can imagine.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, we were nice to him. And you felt that you were in the presence of one of the great tabloid editors of all time. You know, very controversial, very divisive character. Lots of people hate him as much as, you know, many journalists like him, but yeah.
And did the staff find it difficult working for a complete control freak?
I know where this joke is coming from. I can see where the punchline is.
Well, you've done it.
Hand me a barge pole so I don't have to touch the punchline.
Moving on,
yes. Other big stories of 2011, Chris?
I kind of think, again, you can't talk about 2011 without just paying huge tribute to Steve Jobs and what he did and what he achieved, and the performance of the iPad as a new platform and the growth of that and the adoption of that is just phenomenal. I think that what Apple have achieved and continue to achieve, I think is huge, and I think that we're starting to see some great examples of use of that platform from a brand and advertising point of view. And the last one for me, I think, is a nod to Google and Google Plus, 16 days or 18 days to reach 10 million users. Again, a huge story. And when we look back and the shift in search, which I think people are starting to grasp, but this shift of search from being link-based to being like-based, I don't think we can underappreciate how important it's going to be, the fact that my search results when I'm logged into Google Plus will be prioritized based on what my friends have liked.
Now, Google Plus One. Are you an active user of it yourself?
I'm an active user of Google Plus, yeah. Yeah.
I know I should be.
I have a much tighter group though, so it tends to be, Facebook has now become a bit of a it's a mass personal network, I suppose, and I keep my Google Plus a lot tighter.
So how much time do you spend on it each day?
I'll check it most days. I mean, it's so integrated that it's not something that, I think it's increasing with media. Media isn't something that we plug, you know, we turn on to and then turn off again. I think that media is just integrated, media is just there, and Google is a great example of that. So Google Plus is there whenever I do a search. Google Plus is there whenever I check my email, my personal email. So I think that the media is just now part of the infrastructure, and certainly the Google Plus is just part of the infrastructure that I now use to navigate the world.
Just going back to Steve Jobs, do you think that it was a bit of a Princess Diana moment, though, that we all kind of went mad, really, with our grief?
Speak for yourself. I think that there was definitely a reaction. I think that reaction, I think it was justified when you look at what's been achieved. I think that were some people perhaps too voracious? That's probably not for me to say. But
I remember walking past the Apple store and seeing people lighting candles outside.
Yeah. And it's not.
But
for me.
I felt quite moved, actually.
Well,
at the time,
I think.
To be honest. I'm not as cynical as Martin.
I was kind of going to say, well, is that going too far? I mean, I think that if someone feels sufficiently compelled to light a candle outside the store of someone who's created products that they've come to love and use on a daily basis, then I think they're perfectly entitled, and that emotional response is valid.
I think it was it Barack Obama who made the point, or rather, I'm sure it was his speechmaker made the point, that most people would have read the news of Steve Jobs' death on one of his devices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like a Sam Seaborn line to me.
Next, Mumbrella's Agencies of the Year.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones.
Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves.
Check out the case study for Nissan Microcitizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone All-Time Prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
This week, the Mumbrella Annual will be landing on the desks across the country. As you'll probably already know, among the lists, there is the industry hotties, worst flash mobs and biggest turkeys, but we also have some more serious titles to bestow, specifically the agencies of the year. Let's start with the media agency of the year, given that Chris is here. Firstly, Chris, not including PhD, who would you have put there?
First of all, I think Icon is a great show. I think that it's great to see an agency that puts culture and retention so centrally doing so well. And it's great to see an agency that has those principles of culture, work, and instilling its people with worth in what they do. It's great to see that agency performing and growing. I think, as you know, in the annual, nudging to sixth place in terms of billing. So I think I think it's great to see Icon there. I think it's great to see what they stand for there.
What do you think of MediaCom? Because they were B&T's Media Agency of the Year.
Yeah, I mean, they've had a great year. They've had a really good year. I think Toby was on this sofa not too many weeks ago in conversation. They've had a great year. They've made some...
I think Toby, who, as we record this, has just been announced, is now executive chairman with rumours of some sort of Asia-Pacific role as well.
Mm. I think Campaign Magazine's... Agency Person of the Year as well. I think that some very interesting hires going on there and across Mindshare as well.
Just the Icon thing's really interesting. We've been doing some staff appraisals this week, and one of the things that came out really strongly is the reason, you know, money doesn't come into it when it comes to kind of job satisfaction, so much as your relationship with your boss and opportunity for training and development. And I thought, you know, the fact that they're kind of walking the walk, you know, is really real credit to them and an example to everybody else, really. And it kind of did make me think, right, okay, well, when I do the appraisals, I'm going to really focus on training and development. That's our big focus for next year. So I think it's a good example to everybody in the industry, really.
I always get mixed up on whether you're supposed to walk the walk or talk the talk.
I think you've got to do both. You can do both, yeah. They're not mutually exclusive.
Remuneration didn't come up in our conversation, actually. So maybe this isn't the time, but later.
Yeah, maybe later.
Yeah, okay.
I often talk the walk.
Tim, could you run us through who the various agencies of the year are?
Okay, well, we talked about Icon. So some of the points which Chris has just sort of nodded towards. So they've set themselves, the target of being the best employer by 2014.
75 hours of training per head, which you know, which seems pretty bold. I mean, I don't know how you guys do it at PhD, but I know when I've visited agencies, sometimes a lot of them seem to have a Friday morning where they have media owners or come in and talk to either the whole team or part of the team. And I'm assuming that right there you got 2 hours of training, would be my guess. So I suspect that's how some agencies, you know, what they would classify as training. Also, I rather like the parallel universe thing they do, where they actually have the staff swapping roles with people at Google to understand sort of best things. How do you organise your training at PhD?
It's quite rigorous. We invest in very constructed external resources. We've got some external resources which run dozens of courses across the course of the year. And again, we appraise people annually and review that. Again, and we make sure that people are getting relevant courses that are right and relevant to them. They're full day or 2 day courses, generally off site. We also make sure that we do very structured internal training on Aetna, on our planning process. And we also have dedicated time each week to talk about and debate media. So it's there's no one external, it's purely PhD people in a room. Where we talk about work, where we talk about media, and it's a safe environment to really explore and think what we do. And I think that's probably quite an important part of training as well. I think that the training is so fundamental to what we do, but I think that really instilling in planners a sense of, you know, what do I believe in and why is one of the most important bits of training we can do as an industry and as an agency.
And Tim, what about PR Agency of the Year? Run us through that.
Yeah, PR Agency of the Year, Edelman Australia. So we've seen a bit of a reinvention of Edelman. Michelle Hutton came in as CEO well over a year ago now. We also saw Matthew Gain come in as head of digital. We've seen a few new clients, Kmart, Tyre and Auto Service, KFC. We've seen some interesting stuff from KFC that we'll talk about a little bit later on in this podcast. Some new tools launching as well. And then one of the rather nice little stunts was the Samsung pop-up store, which they had next to the Apple store on the day that the iPhone 4 launched. So that was a good attention getter. But you know, it was a close-run battle. Other agencies we were looking at, Mango Communications, which is a sister agency to DDB, from the lifestyle side of things, Liquid Ideas. So there were a few in the running.
And Creative Agency of the Year?
Creative Agency of the Year, Clem's Melbourne, Clemenger BBDO Melbourne, the people who brought you the NAB breakup campaign. But also great work for Carlton, great work for Guide Dogs Australia, all sorts of interesting things. You know, they're, you know, consistently the best agency around at the moment. You know, that there were, again, the monkeys were considered, but, you know, it certainly didn't feel a difficult decision to give it to Clem's.
You've really got to tip your hat to an agency who can continually achieve, you know, what they do. It's often easy to stay big, or it's easy to stay smart. To stay big and smart so consistently, you really have got to tip your hat to them.
I suppose is that the question that you guys are asking yourself? Because you're probably, by size, would you be like the 11th, 12th, something like that, do you think?
In that area.
And presumably your ambition clearly will be to break into the top 10.
Yeah.
How do you both grow and keep your culture, keep the fact that you're built around planning, all of those things? What's the plan?
The work. The plan is to focus on the work, and then how you get great work is that you have that culture that I've talked about, and that DNA in your culture, and you keep people inspired and you keep people interested, and you have really grown-up, interesting conversations with your clients. Focus on the work and focus on people, and growth will take care of itself.
And our selection for Advertiser of the Year was Coca-Cola for the Share a Coke campaign. What did you think of that, Chris?
I think it's a great bit of thinking. I think that it's full declaration, I work on PepsiCo. I think
I'm sorry, yes, mate, forcing you to say nice things
I'm very happy to say nice things about any great bit of thinking.
If right now you had to choose what delicious drink to drink, what would it be?
Pepsi Max, Tim. I'm very happy to say good things about great work when I see it, and I think it's a great bit of work, it's a great bit of thinking, and I think to their credit, it has been executed really, really well. I think if you look at the list of agency credentials, from Naked and Icon through to One Green Bee and a whole raft of agencies involved, and Ogilvy involved in making it happen, it's testament really to a great execution as well. That said, you know, we've also seen some great innovation in that category. Full stop. I think the Top Mates app that Pepsi brought out is a great bit of thinking as well. I think there's a much more interesting, bigger story, which is brands really starting to grab the bull by the horns and take Woolies and Coles on and start not buying more posters or 30-second spots because Coles and Woolies want them to, and instead genuinely taking a step back and innovating and building brand equity and quite right too.
And Martin, you're, as a family man, you must amble the aisles of the supermarkets quite a lot. Have you witnessed these battles going on or in front of the named bottles of Coke as people tussle for the one with their name on?
Yeah, I mean, every single Coke display that you see in a supermarket or in a garage is an absolute mess because people are standing there and just putting bottles all over the place. I mean, you know, it is. But for me, that is, I think you said it at the beginning, it's just a really simple, brilliant idea. And what I like about it is that it had some traditional channels, but it played to the kind of social media sort of narcissism that everybody's kind of feeling. You know, you post on Facebook what you're doing today. This is kind of, you know, locks into that kind of emotion. So yeah, I thought it was brilliant, but just so simple. And it's one of those ones where you think, why the hell didn't I think of that? But somebody did, and fair play to them.
And it leveraged that most valuable bit of media real estate, which is the pack and the product, and that for me is the other great element of this, that it was something where product was the hero, where product was center, and it just really leveraged in a really good way that bit of owned media real estate.
Other campaigns that people like, let's go around the coffee table. Start with Colin. Your favourite campaign of the year?
I was just trying to quickly think of that. And initially I thought NAB, but then I thought maybe that was a bit too obvious. But I did really appreciate the sort of all-out assault that they seem to do on every level. On a smaller scale, I really, the recent Get Up, which was for the for equality in marriage. But the other one I really enjoyed was the Burn for the energy drink. Burn, the branded content bit. I think that, am I a bit behind the times there? Was that late 2010?
The initial stuff was, there has been another execution that was out this year though.
Yeah, I just really enjoyed, I don't know, maybe it's my skateboarding heritage.
Marty, your choices?
Me, it was the Ripple Effect for the Transport Accident Commission, which is the one where the 26 different perspectives on the death of a young man in a road traffic accident, which was, I just thought, incredibly moving. Certainly personally, I've got kind of, Everybody Hurts is a bit of a favourite song of mine for personal reasons. But yeah, I just thought that was really, really well done, the way it was all brought together, and every single one of those clips left you really, really quite kind of stunned, I think. So yeah, definitely for me, that was, I think that one at Cairn,
yes,
on the last day.
Yeah, that's out of, I think, Grey in Melbourne. Yeah. Chris?
I think some of the most interesting work for me continue, and a declaration they're a client, continue to come out of Google and some of the communications that Google are doing. And one of the things we did this year was to capitalise on Gaga being in Sydney. A bit of thinking where we were able to activate a campaign for them for Chrome. They had some great Gaga content, and we partnered with Channel 10 to amplify that. And the planner who was most involved with it, Ryan Saunders, even had a briefing, a brief touch with the Gaga herself as well. It was all by accident. He ran into her, she was running into Nevermind. Or Arc, I think, actually. But yeah, so Ryan even had a minor brush with greatness as well. So, but just great, great work coming out of Google.
Obviously business hours then.
It was outside of business, and I think he got points for it.
Oh, okay, great. Next, Chicken Fight.
Thinking of working at an ad agency? Looking for the best creatives to develop your next ad campaign? Look no further than the Mumbrella Creative Agency Review. 148 pages of hardcore industry intelligence to help you make your next big agency decision. Visit book.focalattractions.com.au/MCAR.
Chicken chain KFC has launched an attack ad on McDonald's, accusing the burger chain of reconstituting its chicken. Let's take a listen.
Oh, yeah, and that nice chicken outside gave me this coupon.
I'm sorry, this is expired.
You son of a...
Well, that was Family Guy's Peter Griffin fighting a chicken. So let's take a proper listen.
Apparently, some McRestaurants are using processed chicken patties to make their scorching burgers. This means that after they've sliced and diced the chicken, they piece it back together and freeze it into the shape of a chicken patty. But at KFC, we believe the best chicken burgers are made from single 100% whole breast fillet, hand-breaded in-store by dedicated cooks. Try our Zinger Burger today and remind yourself why our chicken tastes so good.
Now, the ad created by Ogilvy with Mediacom handling the strategy used Lego-style blocks to pull apart the chicken or something that looks like a chicken and put it back together somewhat incorrectly. Martin, pot, kettle, black.
the thing is with that, I like the fact that, you know, the whole point was that their patties are, you know, real kind of one piece of chicken, and I mean they must have some pretty weird shaped chickens, but to me it was, you know, it's got to have an element of truth in it. And the beginning, the Lego blocks, yeah, their chickens all get pulled apart and then put back together again and frozen, that fair enough. Then they got to the point where they said how they're all lovingly seasoned by, you know, professionals, and you know, you think of the, you know, spotty adolescent who actually serves you your chicken when you get in the shop. And at that point it lost me a little bit, because you just thought, yeah, it's actually not really true, is it?
Chris, what do you think of attack ads? Is there a place for attacking a competitor?
I think there's a place for attacking a competitor if you don't live in a glass house. But I think KFC aren't in that position.
You know, I mean, the issue that I have as well is, I remember hearing, I think I heard the radio ad before I saw the TV ad, and just my first thought was, I didn't particularly take in what the brand was, but I just thought, oh, you know, I thought chicken was slightly a healthy alternative for a serving burger. Clearly it's not. I'll skip chicken. I didn't think, okay, I'm going to change my habits where I go. I think, you know, the first time having heard that, I was probably less likely to walk into KFC because I associate it mainly with chicken.
Yeah, I think it's generally true. I think that when attack ads become profligate, then I think the category probably is the one that tends to lose out. I think what's interesting about NAB breakup is it seemed to be the attack ad that wasn't the attack ad. Mm. And I think that was a very interesting exception, which proved the rule that generally categories don't win when brands start attacking.
Yeah, that whole thing about our chicken's less healthy than yours isn't really going to work, is it?
And it's two different ads as well. I mean, what's really interesting when you watch it is that there are two ads. There's a Lego 15-second ad, and then there's Marks and Spencer's food porn.
And the second
for the second 15.
You're right, they're jammed together.
Exactly.
You can visualise the conversation with the client saying, I want some images of how delicious ours is. You can see the compromise from what the original proposal probably was.
It is there on the pillar, a tribute and trophy to compromise. There, right there.
Is it when you're sitting in the boardroom with a client or something like that, is there sort of a jovial rivalry, you know, when Pepsi does one on Coke or when KFC does one on McDonald's? Do they think it's kind of, oh, well, they'll get back at us somehow? Or is it, I don't know.
Is there genuine hatred?
Yeah, and do you suggest against it because, you know, the audience will know it comes off as quite catty?
First of all, I don't think it's hatred, but I think that as communications and marketing professionals, we are all very passionate about those things that we're communicating. I think if you're not passionate about those things you're communicating, there's an issue. And that's no more true than it is for a marketer. I think, though, that whenever I'm in that room, whenever I'm having that conversation, what I say to those people is, stay true to you and make the conversation about you. I think that the second you're kind of, you go off base and start talking about somebody else or comparing yourself to somebody else, I think that you lose sight of what counts. And our job as communicators is to give those products and services and brands that we work on compelling reasons to exist in the world and give them relevance. And I think that if you stay focused on that and stay focused on those products and brands that you're working on, then you will by and large stay more true to what you're trying to achieve and how you're trying to achieve it.
And where does it all end? Colonel Sanders having hate sex with Ronald McDonald, presumably?
Well, not again.
Next, the last radio ratings survey in 2011. On Tuesday, the last radio ratings survey of the year came out. Colin, talking us through every single metro market, leaving out no detail, no matter how small, how did the ratings end up?
Oh, I'll take a deep breath. I guess all eyes, for starters, were on the scandal hit Kyle and Jackie O show in Sydney, in which it was only actually the last 2 weeks of the full 10-week period that saw advertisers pull out and media hate towards Sandilands. But of course, as it would happen, the show jumped from 10.6% to 11.2% share in Sydney's FM breakfast slot.
Which I suppose you can't read too much into it either way. How did you feel about the Sandilands scandal, Chris?
I feel genuinely conflicted, and I feel I'm genuinely in two minds. Part of me is that we bear responsibility, or those people that we work with bear responsibility as broadcasters, to do things that are not just in the public interest, but that don't contravene things that don't cross lines that really shouldn't be crossed. And so on one hand, I feel like that. On the other hand, I feel that, you know, the old adage that I may disagree with you, but I will defend your right to say it. It's part of what society means. It's part of what you know, being part of, you know, a 7 million population on the planet means. It means being able to tolerate other people's views and opinions.
What was your advice to your clients when the storm was hitting and left and right advertisers were pulling out?
We had no blanket policy. We had individual conversations with clients, and we said, this is what's happening, this is the situation. What do you want to do, and how do you want to do it?
Fitness First is one of your clients, and they were still on the air 2 or 3 days in, and then they went, but clearly they were one of the last ones to go.
Yeah, I mean, that was a schedule that ran, the conversation was had, and we eventually pulled out of that space. But there was no blanket positioning. I think that it was right for every client to decide what was right for them, and we gave all our clients the best guidance and advice we could on that. I think there's a bigger issue for Southern Cross Austereo, and I think that one of their issues is who goes there instead, and I think that, if nothing else, this is a wake-up call for talent and bringing up new talent and talent throughout the network.
And do you think that, you know, once the storm dies down and if the ratings continue to go up, that all of those brands will just quietly sort of come back again?
I think brands will go where they can connect and engage with listeners or viewers or with people. It's not for me to say, I don't think, what might happen. This one feels different. I'd be surprised if people creep back. I'd be surprised actually if the media left people creep back. I think there are too many people, some of which are in this room, keeping an eye on that.
I think it'll become a big media story. It'll start to build up, I think, a couple of days before they come back on air, because there's always a long ratings break, which you're in now, on who's going to be there on the first day. And you can guarantee that there'll be a bunch of journalists tuned in at 6 o'clock in the morning with a notepad waiting to note down which advertiser's there on the first day. And of course you've got the campaign groups, because change.org got involved this time around. So they wouldn't describe themselves as a campaign group so much as a platform,
but clearly they were helping people campaign. So yeah, I just think it will become a big media story at the start.
I think it will continue to be a media story, and I think that the brands, the agencies have just got to do with what they feel is right. And I think that I defend Austereo's right to put them on the air. I defend advertisers' rights to be there if they want to be there, and I will defend those to the hilt.
Colin, some more of the ratings, the significant moments.
Yeah, well, I guess it was Fitzy and Whipper's first ratings survey, their first complete one doing breakfast on Nova, and we saw a drop to 5.4%.
It wasn't a big drop.
No, 5.6 to, I think, to 5.4. Yes. So.
And to me, that's actually probably a result in that, you know, when you get a new lineup, and you often do get a fall. I was almost surprised it didn't fall more just because it's a new slot.
Yeah, well, Paul Jackson did say... program controller for DMG, did say when you're up against heritage shows like Kyle and Jackie O and Jonesy and Amanda, you are going to see a drop in the first... Well, maybe not see a drop, but you will, you know.
Has anyone else been listening to Fitzy Whipper? I have, I think it's quite good. I've been listening to the podcast. I think they're settling in. They've been playing some good pranks.
They are funny guys.
Everyone else is just looking puzzled, clearly not commercial radio listeners. What else?
Jonesy and Amanda at WSFM had the biggest growth in the breakfast slot from 6.7 to 7.7. Fairfax, both their Sydney 2UE and Melbourne 3AW. Both the talk stations dropped in their Monday to Sunday shares. However, 3AW still came out on top in Melbourne for their share, so doing strongly. Albury Wodonga, no, I'm only kidding. In Melbourne, Southern Cross Austereo's Fox FM remained on top of the FM pile. In Adelaide, Australia Radio Network, their Mix 102.3 won the weekly share, but 5AA won the important breakfast and drive slot, so it was very much neck and neck there. And also for the ARN, in Brisbane, 97.3 FM edged out B105, Triple M and Nova, all of them within the 11% share bracket. So it's a real four-horse race up there. And in Perth, Southern Cross Austereo dominated with Mix 94.5 on top with 15%, while sister station 92.9 FM was second with 12.6% share. And those shares are the Monday to Sunday brackets.
Now, Chris, you were suddenly scribbling madly there. Was there a radio point that you wanted to make, or no? Clearly, there wasn't
a radio point to make. I want to make a few shout outs at the end, but
we'll prepare for those.
We'll do that. Yeah, just
when the moment comes.
Just bear with us, listeners, and you'll get my shout outs in a few moments.
Like smashy and nice.
Something to look forward to.
You can make a request as well. I'll slip a song in there if you like.
Next, ACP boss Phil Scott departs.
There's more to radio than music through your headphones.
Radio can connect your brand with consumers in more ways than just over the airwaves.
Check out the case study for Nissan Micro Citizen, where listeners were sent to LA, Barcelona and New York to get in sync with the city. Or the interview on how the Lady Gaga deal for Vodafone all-time prepaid was done. See that and more at seeradiodifferently.com.
On Tuesday, ACP boss Phil Scott announced he will step down at the end of the year. He'll be replaced by Chief Financial Officer Matt Stanton. David Gingell, Nine Entertainment Company Chief Executive, who owns ACP, said, "Phil is a legend in the magazine business and a man for whom I have nothing but the greatest respect. He is responsible for securing Elle and Women's Fitness for us as his final major achievement." Martin, you being the publishing director of Focal Attractions, almost as big a publishing giant as ACP. How does losing someone at this level affect a media company when they have such a broad range of titles and assumedly all operating on relatively independent of each other?
Oh, I can categorically say it would be an absolute disaster.
Yeah, of course.
um,
I mean, obviously, if you lose somebody with that kind of experience and longevity, then it's going to have an impact on everybody, on staff morale, on the kind of direction of the company, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, the thing that's interesting for me is that, as I understand it, Phil Scott is a journalist by background and Matt Stanton is a money man, which I think probably tells you everything you need to know about where we're at with magazine publishing. At the
well,
moment.
I'm not even sure it's magazine publishing now, because we've got Nine Entertainment Co., massive debts being renegotiated at the moment. Lots of speculation about the sale of ACP. You know, will Matt Hanbury come back in for it? The question I would ask if I was a member of staff is with the money man at the top, is it just to, you know, manage costs and see the best possible price for the sale? You know, that would have to be one of the questions you'd ask yourself.
Well, is it a bit of a trend? Because we also saw the exact same thing happen with News, with Hartigan leaving.
Yeah, I although mean, in fairness, Kim Williams
two
isn't...
is not a trend, is
yeah,
it?
Yeah, and also in fairness, Kim Williams, although he's a journalist leaving, it wasn't like they, you know, Kim Williams is a content guy, not a newspaper guy, but he's been about content. He's had some other big media jobs that haven't been as... So it's not like bringing in an accountant in the same way. But yeah, certainly we've seen... two of the, and I hate using the word iconic, but two of the most iconic media companies in the country in the space of a few months have both lost journalist leaders. Chris, is print still important in your campaigns? Magazine in particular, is it an essential part of the media mix?
Yes, I think it obviously depends on the brief, but I think that it still has that ability to, one of the models that we use is connect, where brands look to build associations to third parties, and magazines are an incredibly powerful and potent way to do that. So if you want to build associations with food or cooking, magazines can do that. If you want to build associations with health, you can do that. So they remain a really potent and powerful way of doing that. But one has got to not envy anyone who's in that industry at the moment. I think that it's challenging. I think that the product remains great. I just think that the dynamics of the market are changing, and the dynamics of some of the economics of that part of media is changing. And I think that what's emerging are some great examples of brands that are doing some interesting stuff to combat that. You know, you look to Wired and iPads or whatever it is. But I think that those brands that understand that they are not magazines, but they are passion points, and then leverage different media and different platforms to engage readers or viewers or whoever it might be around that passion point will do very well.
There were some interesting conversations during Magazine Week last month, I guess it was, around magazines and you know, everyone was kind of trying to feel better about themselves, and actually the media agencies got a bit of a kick in. It was suggested, I think, by Nick Chan that
blame the buyers.
Maybe it was the buyers who didn't understand the product rather than the other way around.
The lazy buyers who wouldn't even take the meetings with the niche publishers.
Because we can't see them till next year. He joked. I hope that's not the case. There's certainly a conversation. One of the biggest things that came out of 360 and the manifesto was this idea to really re-engineer and rethink about the relationship between media agencies and media owners. We've recently done that. We've really opened up and reached out to a whole load of media owners, and we opened up what we do and how we do it and kind of rebooted our relationship with those. We need to make sure we continue these conversations. I think that if magazine people start saying that it's the fault of media buyers for not buying enough media, and if media buyers start saying it's the magazine's problems for not creating enough interesting stuff, then I think no one's going to win.
That is almost all we have time for today. Chris, you had a bit of any other business.
I just wonder if you shout out, that's okay. None of them are numbers. I'm not going to play any top 10 hits for anyone. But a big shout out to Emma and Kath and all the great work they've been doing on Pepsi Top Mates and Gatorade Replay work. Absolutely brilliant. And Bill and all his team on Banana Boat. And then a couple of opportunities for listeners to get involved in some of our campaigns, should they wish. So if Taylor Swift is your thing, then thanks to Elizabeth Arden, you can win a chance to win a ticket to Taylor Swift's concert in Melbourne. And you just got to go to Wonderstruck Taylor Swift competition.
Wonderstruck.
It's easy to remember that. Get a pen. Wonderstruck, or just Rewind, because it's on-demand content, isn't it? Wonderstruck Taylor Swift competition.com.au and take part. And if that's not your thing, you can also go to UNICEF's page on Facebook and the great stuff that Rich and Mel have been doing for UNICEF. So say no to NAF on UNICEF Facebook as well, this happy season.
And don't worry, we can edit all of that out later.
Can I just say hello to my dad and anyone else who knows me?
That is all we have time for today. Thank you very much to Chris.
Thanks, Tim. A pleasure as always to be here. And season's greetings to everyone.
And to Martin.
Happy Christmas, one and all.
And to Colin.
I'll be here next week. I'll wish my Christmases then.
The Mumbrella Cast was recorded this week in the studios of Mumbrella House. See you next week for our final podcast of the year. Toodle pip. Oh, sorry, I've got to do this link, haven't I? Rather than just smile at Colin.
You smiled at Colin?
It was welcome.
I thought you were smiling at me. I thought my early bid to get a 2012 Hottie of the Year was working.